This podcast is made possible by thousands of dedicated listeners just like you. Be a part of this powerful three-decade legacy of evangelization by visiting materdeiradio.com or downloading the Hail Mary media app. And thank you for joining us on the bridge between your faith and everyday life.
What is your next mission from God? We all have one. Welcome to Your Next Mission from God with Julie Underko, where the saints show us how it's done. And sometimes they even got it wrong before they got it right. Julie tells their stories to help you find hope, inspiration, and direction to show how the saints discovered and accomplished God's mission for their lives.
Perpetua was a mother, a mystic, and a martyr. And she gives us one of the earliest first-person accounts of Christians being persecuted during the second century in the Roman Empire. But what's even more amazing is that it's from a woman, a document like this from a woman who were generally not educated, but her father saw to her education. She did come from a loving family. They were not Christian, but they loved her. At the time of her arrest, she was 21 years old. She was a married woman. She had a son who was still nursing. He was over a year old, and she was a catechumen. She hadn't been baptized yet. But what's amazing about this document, her diary, is that it gives us not only the account of what happened, but she was a mystic, so it was the unseen world as well. And so we have this whole picture in this diary. It's quite amazing. From the time of the apostles until Constantine in 313, the different emperors there was an ebb and flow as to Christian persecution. It wasn't solid for almost 300 years, but it ebbed and flowed, and there were particularly more severe times. And this man, Emperor Severus, he was one of the bad ones. And it was getting time to celebrate his birthday. And so that would be a holiday for the Roman Empire, you know, because the emperor was thought of as a god. And so that was a chance to have a day off and have a big party. And in honor of that, they have to have games in the different amphitheaters. This would be in Carthage. And so a group of catechumens were arrested to be potential victims in games, thrown to wild animals or made sport of for the crowds in the amphitheater. It was all legal, and because it was Rome and they were Roman citizens, they were given a chance repeatedly to renounce their Christian identity and to pay a homage to the emperor, offering a sacrifice for his good health. And so, but none of them did, and they ended up all being martyred. But their story in the prison is incredible. It took a while to become a Christian, right? It was maybe a 2 or 3 year process, maybe longer. And so they were catechumens. None of them were yet baptized. And yet they had this strong faith to stay the course. In Perpetua's diary, at the very beginning, there's an introduction written by someone else to introduce her. And then she writes the whole diary. And then, of course, there's someone who concludes it because they document the actual martyrdom. And so it is written of her that she was nobly born, reared in a liberal manner, wedded honorably, having a father, a mother, and two brothers, one of them a catechumen, and a son, a child at the breast, and she herself was about 22 years old. So this sets the stage. And now we know that her father was not a Christian, but that we do know that one brother was, because he's in her diary, he talks to her. And it's an amazing conversation that they had that leads to a vision she has, and we'll get into that later. But that she also has a son still nursing, and this is part of the heartache of her sacrifice. So they're taken to the prison, and initially they are taken down into the dungeon, or the worst part of the prison. And if you think about it, in a dungeon where there's no light, have you ever been in a cave where there's no light at all? no starlight, no glimpses of anything where you can't even see your hand in front of your face. It was dark like that. And considering how Perpetua was raised, this would have been a real stark thing for her to face straight away. It would have been like nothing she'd ever endured, even close, in her life. She writes this in her diary. I was much afraid because I had never known such darkness. Oh, bitter day. There was a great heat because of the press. So we think a lot of people pressed together, I'm pretty sure. And there was cruel handling of the soldiers. Lastly, I was tormented by care for the child. So she was missing her boy. I'm sure her breasts were sore and reminding her, and he was probably crying for her. Somewhere along the line, we get an indication that he wasn't real little, like he wasn't a newborn, maybe a year old or older. And in this situation, her father comes to visit her. So you could pay off guards, you could get in and visit, and he was a nobleman, so he went in to see her. And he's really making a case against Christianity, and she needs to give it up and this and that. And this just torments her because he's being aggressive about it, and he's mad, and he's even mad at her for being in that situation. You can understand that if you're a parent, you know, your kid gets into a situation, you kind of get mad at him because you love them. You know, it was kind of like that. But she writes that she was glad when he left because it was a torment to her to have him there, and he couldn't convince her. But what happens is that a couple of deacons pay a visit, and all the catechumens are baptized. And so they're just baptized. So now they are fully initiated into the body of Christ. And these deacons pay off the guards or something, because they make a way for these catechumens to be brought out of the dungeon so that they can be in a part of the prison that's better. And her son is brought to her. I'll read you the account. It's so heartwarming. I obtained that the child should abide with me in the prison. And straightway I became well and was lightened of my labor and care for the child. And suddenly the prison was made a palace for me so that I would sooner be there than anywhere else. And then her brother asked her, because he's a catechumen, Lady, my sister, you are now in high honor, even such that you can ask a vision, and it would be shown to you whether this will be a passion or a deliverance. And I, knowing that I conversed with the Lord, promised him with no doubt in me, and I said, tomorrow I will tell you. And I asked, and this was shown to me. And it's only the first of the visions that she received during her prison stay. In the Nicene Creed, we pronounce that we believe in all the things visible and invisible, because there is this unseen spiritual reality around us all the time. And Perpetua was connected with both worlds, the physical world now and the unseen world. And she had a view that the Lord was showing her in the prison of actually what was happening in the whole realm of things. Perpetua's first vision. I saw a golden ladder reaching up to heaven and very narrow, so that persons could only ascend it one by one. And on the sides of the ladder was fixed every kind of weapon, so that anyone who went up carelessly or not looking upwards would be torn to pieces. And under the ladder itself was crouching a dragon who lay in wait for those who ascended. Satyrus went up first and called to me, Perpetua, I'm waiting for you, but be careful that the dragon does not bite you. And I said, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, he shall not hurt me. And from under the ladder itself, as if it feared me, he slowly lifted up his head, and I trod upon his head, and I went up, and I saw an immense garden, and a white-haired man dressed as a shepherd. Standing around were many thousand white-robed ones. And the man said to me, you are welcome, daughter. Perpetua woke up. But having had the vision of ascending to heaven, of seeing all the thousands of white-robed ones, the Christians who had gone before her who were waiting, and the white-haired man dressed as a shepherd, which she knew to be God the Father, she realized that this was going to be a passion, that she was on her way to heaven, and that she would have to step on the head of the serpent, Satan, and be lifted up to that first step and go on up the ladder. So she no longer pined to be released, but looked for this eternal reality that was going to be hers and her companions. In Catholic history, we see often with martyrs, when they're being pressed to make a concession about their belief, even what would appear to be a small concession, their families are like, make the concession, it won't matter at all. You can believe what you want in your heart, you know, all these different ways of thinking about it. And it's just common. St. Thomas More was one of those where his family, his daughter especially, just wanted him to concede a little bit. It wouldn't make a difference, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even when he's on his way to his execution, she's in the street begging and pleading. Well, we see this with Perpetua and her father. From her diary, Perpetua tells us about her father's second visit to the prison. And then my father came to me, worn out with anxiety. Have pity on me, daughter, on my gray hair. If with these hands I have brought you up to this flower of your age, if I have preferred you to all your brothers, have pity. Have regard for your brothers. Have regard for your mother. Have regard for your son who will not be able to live without you. Lay aside your courage. These things, said my father in his affection, kissing my hands and throwing himself at my feet. And with tears, he called me not daughter, but lady. And I grieved over the gray hairs of my father. And I comforted him, saying, whatever God's will shall happen. And he departed from me in sorrow. Nearing the date of execution, they were taken to a town hall, a public forum, all six of them, and each were given an opportunity to give a sacrifice for the good health of Caesar and to renounce their Christianity. And each one in their turn stood firm, I am a Christian, and would not make the sacrifice. And it came Perpetua's turn. And then appears her father in public. There's lots of people around. He's got her son in his arms. And he's begging her not to do this. And he's getting in the way of the procurator and the proceedings. He's actually making a scene. And so they beat him. And she has to watch him be beat. And this just torments her to no end. But she stands firm. And when she's asked, are you a Christian? She says, I am a Christian. And so when she is returned to the prison, she asks for her son to be brought to her so that she can nurse him. And her father has her son, and he refuses. And so she never sees her son again or her father again. But she said there was a grace given at this moment. Somebody told her, you know, because there was communication, they did have visits and things like that. Someone told her son was weaned and he was doing fine and he didn't need breast milk anymore. So that's why we believe that he wasn't a little infant baby who just had to have milk, that he was, you know, a little bit older, maybe a year old or something like that. But that he didn't need nursing anymore and he wasn't crying for her. And she said, miraculously, her breasts were not swollen. So she wasn't reminded all the time with swollen breasts that her son is hungry. And she said it was a grace. She can't explain it. No mother could imagine having that happen to them. It wouldn't naturally happen. There'd be torment on both sides, the child and the mother. But both were given a grace as she prepared for her final witness. Her sentence at that public forum, at that town hall, they sentenced her to be thrown to the animals. From that point on, she had a vision of her little brother who had died when he was 7. He had died of cancer, and he wasn't a Christian. But she had a vision knowing that he needed some cleaning up and that her sacrifices would be what would help him, and it did. And so her diary is really short. I encourage you to get a copy. Very easy to read, and it's just a short, just a few pages. So I want to tell you a little bit about Felicity. You know, we hear the two of them together, Perpetua, Saints Perpetua and Felicity. And this is because they were very close friends. As it turns out, Felicity had been a slave in her father's household and had been her personal servant. But they became fast friends and they were equals and they were in the formation to become Christians together. They were baptized together in the prison. Felicity is 8 months pregnant. We don't understand all the situations around that, but we know that she was. And we know from St. Paul's teachings that there's no longer slave or free or man or woman. We remember that quote from the Bible, that there's no, people are equal. And so these two women loved each other like sisters. Roman law does not allow the execution in the amphitheater, being thrown to the lions or whatever. They don't allow it if a woman is pregnant. She has to give birth first, and then she can have her sentence of execution. And so Felicity's greatest fear was that everyone would, her friends, her little RCIA group, would go to their deaths together, and she wouldn't be with them. She would have to wait, be alone in the prison, give birth, and then go into the amphitheater for her day among the guilty. They were all afraid of this. They wanted her with them because they loved her. I'll read from the diary just this little quote. They did not want her to shed her sacred and guiltless blood among some of those who had been wicked. So they saw this martyrdom as a doorway to heaven, a beautiful thing, and they didn't want it tainted. They wanted just it to be them and them all together. And so the little group, they just pray. They pray to God that she'll deliver early because she's already 8 months along. And she does. She delivers in the prison. And the guards are taunting her and teasing her during this delivery. But she's pretty feisty. She's speaking back to them about what she's doing. And she gives birth to a little girl. And in Perpetua's diary, it says that this little girl was given to a Christian family to be raised as their daughter. So Felicity gets her wish that she will not die without her friends, that they will all be together. And their day comes. And she and her companions are all led into the amphitheater. And her companions have a different way, you know, that they are hoping that this all goes for them, how they're going to die. And but they save Perpetua and Felicity as their own kind of spectacle. They put them in a net and attach them to a mad cow who gores them and drags them around and really roughs them up. And just before the final end, they give each other a holy kiss. It's like they embrace and they love each other. And then there's the death thrust of the sword. And so what happens with Perpetua is that, now all of this is in her diary, but of course she didn't write it. Someone finished it for her. But there's a young gladiator, and he botched up his death thrust on her, and she's injured, but she is not killed. And so he's shaking. I mean, because, I don't know, he's young and inexperienced, I guess. He's shaking, and she takes his sword and she puts it up to her throat to help him so that he can finish her off. It's something else. And then the Christians go and they gather up the remains of their bodies. And so I just ask you to take Perpetua as a friend. Take Felicity as a friend, and then read about all the companions. They're all cool people in here. You get to know their personalities a little bit more. Get to know them, befriend them, and have them walk with you and teach you and help you grow in holiness in this life. Saint Perpetua, Saint Felicity, all the companions who were martyred on that day, March 7th, pray for us.
You've been listening to Your Next Mission from God with author and speaker Julie Ondurko. For more about Julie, visit her website at CatholicFinishStrong.com and follow her YouTube channel, Catholic Saints on Mission. You can find previous episodes of Your Next Mission from God on the free Hail Mary Media app or your favorite podcast platform. Your Next Mission from God is produced at the studios of Mater Dei Radio in Portland, Oregon. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a friend.
You can support this vital mission of evangelization through materdayradio.com or the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for helping us lead souls to Jesus through the Blessed Virgin Mary.